The following program is part of the Inner Circle Podcasting Group. Go to innercirclecomics.com for more high-quality podcasts.
Doom Patrol. Negative Man. Elastigirl. Robot Man.
Someone wants the Doom Patrol reunited.
Your every word and action is being broadcast across the planet.
Now, Monsieur Mana!
Well done, my Doom Patrol. Well done.
It is too late for you, Kaldao.
Your beloved patrol is doomed.
Hello, and welcome to Waiting for Doom, your one and only podcast dedicated to all things Doom Patrol related, because we love the Doom Patrol, we love talking about them, you guys love tuning in each week and hearing us talk about them, so let's get to it.
We bloody love the Doom Patrol, don't we?
Yes.
I'm Paul, and you can find me on Twitter at @reading_hicks. You can email us if you want to use email at waitingfordoom@gmail.com. We're on Facebook, and our episodes are available on iTunes, Stitcher Radio, Podbean.com, and we are part of the Inner Circle Comics recessive gene pool.
Oh, so, what?
I don't know.
Group, network, party,
oh, it's a network.
House.
Okay.
Something. Yes, right. Hi everyone, I'm Mike. You can find me on Twitter at @avantgarve. You can also find on Twitter our Sentient Show Twitter account, Wilfred, who is at @WFDpod.
Yeah, and we want to thank some people this week. We've had a bit of plugging on the internet and Twitter and other places on podcasts. So a big thank you to the Fire and Water podcast, yes. Shag and Rob. Shag's been mentioning us a bit because he's been listening and turning into a Doom fan. So and we've and we've had some shout outs on the Secret Origins podcast. Ryan over there is doing a fantastic podcast. I recommend them highly.
Yeah, both great shows. Yeah, definitely.
So Mike, how was your week in comics?
Well, it was an interesting week in comics. things I bought off the shelf this week, the Dark Side War Green Lantern one shot, written by Tom King and art by Doc Shander, one of my all-time favorite comic book artists. That was fantastic. Descender number 7, this ongoing saga about a robot boy and his dog and all the wacky shenanigans they get into. And Marvel's new Illuminati number 1 came out, which is kind of life in the Marvel Universe from the point of view of the bad guys, I guess.
Wow.
So that was cool. And of course, we had JLU 15 come out and wrap up the crazy war story that was going on there. What did you think of that one, Paul?
I didn't read it, mate.
You didn't? Right.
I didn't.
I should have asked you that before we recorded.
Awkward. No, I'm trade waiting on that. So
right.
If I'm trade waiting, I always try to leave just one part of it that I can enjoy at the end.
Oh,
it's just a little tip. It's a little incentive to buy it. So
right, learning yeah. The ways of the trade waiters. Right.
Yeah. So I care very much about Robot Man's appearance, but let's face it, I'm not going to save the book by buying it at this point, am I?
No, none of us are. And there was also the wackiness that occurred in Secret Wars number 7, with the gigantic epic fight that happened in that. That was just like, okay, here's this group of warriors, charge and fight. And then on the other page, it'll be, here's this other group of warriors, charge and fight. And the ante just kept going up and up and up every couple of pages. It was insane, but, you know, it was good fun. So
I'm yet to read an issue of Secret Wars, but I do have a whole bunch of issues piled up there.
Really?
I do.
Wow.
Thanks to a certain friend of mine who shares digital codes.
Wow. They're probably thinking that you would have just read them as soon as you got them, but, you know, each to their own. Everyone's different.
Yeah. Well, I'm still missing number 3. So.
Right. Okay, I'll see if I've got that one for you. Was there any other interesting Doom Patrol-related news this week that we came across?
Was there ever? Yeah, as is often the case, there was a bit of a Doom Patrol that never was came to light at a Comic Con where Jared Way and Becky Cloonan started sharing. They basically had a Doom Patrol pitch all ready to go, and it died in the crib. Basically, he couldn't find the time to do it.
Yeah, and yeah. He calls himself a Doom Patrol fan.
Yeah, I know. Yeah. But he did share some art, some of Becky Cloonan's art. So we got a picture of a team, which is made up of a very Morrissey-looking Cliff Steele. And Negative Man, who looks like a stylish dude without bandages this time?
Well, I saw that, and he kind of reminded me of Negative Man from Volume 3.
Yeah.
The Tangen Huat run. So,
well, sort of.
Sort of, yeah.
Crossed with Chris Isaac or someone.
Yeah. And a couple of new names that were in there as well.
Well, Terry Nunn, who looks like a girl with big earrings, and Brian Ferry.
And apparently it was related somehow to the singer, Brian Ferry.
Though it looks like a guy in sort of some sort of jacket, hood, helmet
say
sort of arrangement.
Wear. I know you want to say fetish wear.
Fetish wear, yes.
We're all friends here. Look, it wouldn't be Doom Patrol with someone in a really bizarre costume, you know?
Yeah.
But yeah, what? I love the look of that piece of art that Becky Cloonan did, and I'm really disappointed, as I'm sure all the Patrol fans are, that it never went anywhere.
Yeah, well, I'm just wondering why you put Brian Ferry on the team. Maybe his job is to make everyone stick together.
Oh my God. Maybe it is, Paul. Maybe it is.
Oh dear.
But yeah, that was kind of a really interesting article to come out this week. And yeah, I really like the look of Cloonan's Cliff Steele as well. He kind of looks cool but really angry, which is how Cliff should be.
Sullen. He actually looks sullen.
Yes. That's another good word for it, yes. So yeah. What could have been though, hey? You know?
Yeah. Jared, Becky, if you're listening, we're here. You can tell us all about it.
That's right. You know?
Yeah.
Love to have a chat with you.
You can have an unlimited platform of our podcast to speak of it.
Yeah.
Yeah. I actually reached out to Jared Way about a year ago and said be on the show. Well, not a year ago. Probably about 9 months ago.
That, yes. He didn't get back to you?
No, he never did. But I didn't even know about his Doom Patrol picture that time. So
I don't think any of us did, really.
Yeah. Freaky.
Yes. But I think it's a good sign that DC are willing to take a pitch for the team.
Yeah.
You know, if they were prepared to, you know, go with a pitch from that pair, who's to say what might still be, you know, being worked on in the background that we don't know about? Because this was a total surprise. This was, I woke up and saw that news and was like, oh my God, what the hell?
Yeah, and the way Bleeding Cool reported it was ambiguous that it wasn't happening, so it took me a little bit to work that out.
Yeah, I think we were all in the same boat, because I was like, oh my God, you know, share this news online as quickly as possible with as many people as possible. And then a little while later, it was like, oh, it's not actually happening. That's great. No egg on our face, you know.
So,
I think even Wilfred was so dismayed, he said, you'll believe that a Sentient Show Twitter account can swear like a sailor. Thankfully, he didn't. Yeah. So.
A rare bit of emotion from Wilfred.
Mm.
Yeah, as for my... Well, it's been a little while since we recorded, but I went to a comic con since we last spoke.
Awesome. How was that?
Yeah, it was the... I was there for the birth of Goulburn Comic Con, which was... Goulburn is a small New South Wales town halfway between Canberra and Sydney. And, they've decided to start up a comic con based around the library in the council centre there. And, it was pretty bloody good. Very small, low-key, but we had a comic book writer of note there in Ryan K. Lindsay. And I attended a writing workshop of his, which was really good. And... there was a few sellers and lots of cosplay. It was an amazing amount of cosplay for such a small town.
Right.
Yeah. So some pretty impressive efforts there.
Right. Were you're not expecting that many cosplayers in Goulburn then?
No, I wasn't actually. I didn't expect the cosplay to take off that way. But there was probably nearly 100 entrants in the cosplay competition.
Wow.
Yeah. So, but it was a good time. And I hope it continues to grow and thrive, because I think it's fantastic having a comic con that close to where I live.
Yeah, definitely.
Yeah, it's within an hour's drive from where I am, which is fantastic. Yeah. Is that ticking?
Yeah, it's ticking. Yep. Oh, look, it's the Doom Clock. Surprise, surprise.
Sweet.
Oh, Okay. We turn and we look once again upon the face of the Doom Clock. We can see that the last issue of a Doom Patrol book we had was issue 22 of volume 5.
Sorry, which way did we turn? I turned to the left, was it?
Did you?
Is it to the right?
It's just a My step right? to the right. No. Just the other. You're on the left. There we go.
Oh, okay. Yeah, I can see it. Okay. Oh, yeah. Clear.
Yep. You Thanks. Might need to duck a little bit, but yeah. See it now?
Yes, I do.
Cool. Okay. So, yes, as we can see on the display, the last issue of the Doom Patrol book we had was issue 22 of volume 5, which we refer to as a Giffen Clark run. That was cover dated July 2011 and went on sale May 4th that same year, which means it's been 4 years and 28 weeks since our last Doom Patrol book. That's,
wow.
That's not great.
That's a huge amount of time.
And if Jared Way and Becky Cloonan had, you know, helped a couple of brothers out, you know,
yeah,
be a different story. Not that we're bitter or anything. The last appearance of the team, however, was only 14 weeks ago in two different comic books, one of those being All-Star Section 8, number 3. We had a cameo of the Patrol in the background of a huge meeting of all the Justice League-type heroes, and also in Justice League United 12, where we had a one-panel appearance of the team as Stargirl was getting Robot Man on side to join her for JLU's next mission. This week in Doom Patrol history... You're going to love this one, Paul. On sale for $3.95 US on November 16th, 1993, with a cover date of 1994, was Doom Patrol Annual number 2. which long-time listeners would know as being my least favorite Doom Patrol comic ever.
Oh, yeah. Ooh.
Written by Rachel Pollack, with art by Mark Wheatley, letters by John E. Workman Jr., and colors by Stuart Chaffetz. It was part of the Children's Crusade crossover that ran through the Vertigo annuals that year, and this story was titled The Wild, the Good, and the Grown Up. And it showed Dorothy and the Wild Girls being transported to free country, along with the rest of the quote-unquote rescued children. So, yes, this is... my least favorite, my most hated Doom Patrol comic of all time. We discussed it along with the other Doom Patrol related annuals way back in episode 27.
Yeah.
Yes. And it was funny, Paul, because you and I were talking about that annual earlier today.
We were.
And I thought, ooh, do I spoil it? And I was like, no, I'll keep it for the show. So, yes, if you want to hear me vent about the Doom Patrol for a change, dear listeners, go and have a listen to episode 27. Where we talk about the annuals. That was a fun show. It's got the least,
least popular show.
Yeah, funny that.
It's amazing.
Anyway, that's it for the Doom Clock this week.
This week on Doomsplaining, we're looking at a crossover that happened early in Volume 2 of the Doom Patrol. So this was the Kupperberg era of the Doom Patrol. And it crossed over with one of the most popular DC titles of the time, which was Superman, which is in the middle of John Byrne's famous run. Ooh. And this was, I'd say it's good Byrne, not bad Byrne. So.
Well, that answers that question.
So Mike is looking at, you're going to take us through Doom Patrol number 10. Tell
yes.
us about it.
Doom Patrol number 10, cover date of July 1988, went on sale March 29 that year for $1. Holy jeez, $1 for 32 pages. That's pretty cool. So written by Paul Kupperberg, Eric Larson was a penciler, Gary Martin did the inks, Johnny Workman Jr. did the letterer, apologies, John, and Thomas J. Ziuko was the colorist. This story is titled The Soul of the Machine, and it features not just one Robot Man, but two. So we open with the Doom Patrol in their, I guess, danger room, we'll call it, their training room.
And they're out of the van. So
they're out of the van for a change, yes. So Cliff is testing out the new body that he's had put together after their last few encounters with, you know, Gargoax's Plastic Men and Shrapnel as well. And Josh and Val are sort of watching him from the control room and putting him through the paces and getting him to try and lift, you know, about 9 tons worth of metal stuff. And of course, Cliff just shreds it to nothingness and says, yeah, I think I'm pretty good. I think I'm good. So they're all happy they're doing that. We cut away to Cliff's ranch, which we haven't seen since... Oh, geez.
Issue 2?
Something like that.
Issue 3?
Yeah, because it was Lytle who was on the art then.
Yeah.
So it's been a while, and we see a shadowy figure crashing through the barn on his land, and his groundskeeper fronts up to the barn and says, what do you think you're doing here? This is private property. And we see a metallic arm reaching out for the groundsman, and over the page we get revealed that it's Metallo, Superman villain. He's basically saying, you foolish man, don't you know that, you know, you should know, being the employee of another robot, that your bullets will do nothing to me. So, of course, Metallo grabs the poor guy and starts threatening to snap his neck. And he says, you know, you're done for unless you tell me where Cliff has taken all this stuff that I'm looking for. He's basically digging through boxes looking for metallic parts, of course. the groundsman, you know, gives up the goods and says he's in Kansas City. Mr. Seal shipped them all to the Doom Patrol headquarters in Kansas City. And have you read a lot of Metallo stories in the past, Paul?
I've read all the ones that led up to this story in this era of Superman, yeah.
Okay, because he's a very wordy villain.
He's a talker in this, isn't he?
He is. Like, when he gets told that he has to go to Kansas City, he says, this greatly complicates matters. I did not foresee a trip to Kansas City. And I didn't expect him to talk like that.
Yeah, well, Metallo's a bit in this. He's in the same boat as Cliff, really. He's a human brain in a metal body.
Yeah.
Yeah, with a kryptonite power source, which at this point in time has been stolen by Lex Luthor.
Okay.
So he has a grudge against Lex Luthor.
Right. Okay. So we cut back to Kansas City, and we're seeing a news reporter interview the people that are picketing out the front of their headquarters, which has been going on for a while since this run of the patrol started. And we get to see City Councilman Reynolds, who we've had appear a little bit before in the past.
Yep.
And he's saying that he's there joining the picketers because, you know, he doesn't want the Doom Patrol there because basically they bring villains to the city, they have fights, and it raises the insurance on the city.
He doesn't mention the sweet bribe he got to.
No, of course he doesn't. Of course not. So the patrol still being picketed. Inside their headquarters, we see Josh talking to Cliff, and Josh is saying, you know, it's getting ridiculous. What do we do to deserve this kind of abuse? And Larry basically Cliff dismisses him and says, I've got bigger problems. I want to know what happened to Larry. Because last time we saw Larry, he was heading off to the bus station.
To go to Louisiana.
Yes. And then who turns up but good old Arani, everyone's favorite team leader.
Yay.
She butts into the argument. And she starts going on about, well, look, it appears I've made my recovery just in time. A week in hospital and the entire team falls apart. You know, the Doom Patrol was created for a specific purpose, and all this chaos is the price we pay for allowing ourselves to be sidetracked by unimportant matters. What specific purpose do you think she's talking about, Paul?
Could it be to find her husband?
Maybe. I love the fact that on this page, Josh storms off and we see a thought bubble from him saying, I've heard this all before too many times. yeah, we feel
you're not alone there, Josh.
Yeah, we feel you. So we cut away, and on the next page, lo and behold, we get to see Larry Traynor. And he's actually gone to Belle Reve Federal Prison.
So that's the home of the Suicide Squad, if I remember things correctly.
Wow, all this interaction with the DC Universe. It's awesome.
It's amazing.
That sounded a little bit sarcastic, but I love it when the Doom Patrol do interact with the rest of the DCU. It's great stuff.
Yeah.
I wish they would do it more. So Larry is, you know, being led through the halls, and he's there to have a meeting with a very specific person who might be able to help him regain his powers. And who do we get to see but Martin Krull, a.k.a. Reactron.
Sweet.
And he's standing there in all his purple and gold glory with all this energy coming off him, and he's you know, in this special room that's made just for him. So somehow Larry's got in his head that Reactron's going to repower him. So
yeah.
That'll be fun to see. We cut back to the Doom Patrol headquarters, and this time we see the junior members in the training room going through all their paces there. So we see Karma, Lodestone, and Scott Fisher. with his awesome code name. So they're fighting off all the machines. And then
they
should
have called him Hot Hands.
Hot Hands. They could have gone with that.
Yeah.
Hot Hands. I like it. So Josh and Val are in the control room, you know, watching the kids do their training. And what do you know? Josh makes a move on Valentina Vostok, finally.
Yeah.
She says, you didn't come here to check on their progress, nor to make this inane small talk. Say what it is that's on your mind. And Josh says, yeah, you're right. Joshua, what are you? And they embrace
him. Goes in for the pash.
Yep. Oh. But of course, Val being Val, she pushes him away. Tells him to stop.
There's a panel of her enjoying it.
Yeah, a panel.
A panel, and then it's like, no!
No!
Angst!
Stop! Angst! Because we couldn't be happy or anything in this team. She's basically saying to Josh, it'll never work, you know. How can he love her when she's in that condition with, you know, herself covered in bandages? And just as they're getting into more deep and meaningful, all the contraption in the training room go haywire. They manage to grab Karma, which shocks him and the rest of the team because he's so used to being untouchable because of his powers. And he kind of says, oh, the machines mustn't have brains for my power to work on. So they cut the training exercise short. They get all the kids out of the room. And we cut away to a darkened corridor. And we can see Metallo. He's smashed through quite a few boxes. And he's come to the realization that the part he's looking for, his torso, is actually missing from all the boxes he's been looking through. And somehow modifications he's made to himself will allow him to control the torso. And geez, I hope no one's currently using that torso, Paul. That might be catastrophic.
That would function as a plot device, I'm sure, if that were to happen.
We cut back to the training room, and who walks in and interrupts the kids from leaving but Robot Man. Cliff Steele. And so he's actually saying, come on, kids, let's try some more training, you know, let's show you some moves, get you fighting. Oh, hang on a minute. I've suddenly lost control of my body and I'm not holding back anymore.
Oh, dear.
Yes, yes. So he starts punching through a wall for some reason.
Yeah.
I don't know why he decided to do that. But Josh and Val realize that something's not up and they chase after him. And basically it's on for young and old.
Yeah. But
the entire team is fighting against a Robot Man who's trying to say to them, I can't control my body. Something is not right here. So they're all dogpiling onto him. They break through another wall, and sure enough, they run smack dab right into Metallo, who has very quickly created a whole squad of robot spiders and henchmen to help fight him. And I love the fact that Scott Fisher is, you know, he's been knocked to the ground. He looks up and he says, oh no, it's shrapnel again. It's like, no, it's not. It looks nothing like shrapnel, you idiot.
Well, it could be shrapnel, but very smooth version of shrapnel.
Right. Buffed shrapnel. Right. So again, another massive fight breaks out and Metallo is basically yelling at Cliff, it's my body, Robot Man. I want my body back. And all chaos breaks out and the entire team is fighting Metallo and his creations. Funnily enough, Karma decides to sit the fight out.
Yep. He knows when he shouldn't be involved and...
Yeah.
Hoofs it.
I guess he thinks that, you know, because they don't have human brains, his power won't really affect them, but he could have done something.
Well, he thinks Metallo is a robot, not a human.
Yeah. He could have done more than that still. So anyway, as the fight breaks out, all hell is busting loose everywhere, and of course, everyone crashes through the wall that takes them to the outside of the headquarters, and they collide with the picketers. Which is sort of exactly the thing they're picketing about. But they want all these freaks and supervillains to not come to Kansas City, and here they are, right in front of them. So that was kind of funny. So we cut away to a place some listeners might be familiar with called Smallville, which is also in Kansas. And we see a young gent called Clark about to have a picnic with someone called Lana. And he overhears a news report on the car radio that the Doom Patrol are fighting Metallo. He rips open his shirt and, oh my God, it's actually Clark Kent Superman.
Whoa, slow down. What?
That's right. Superman, he's ready to fly into action. And he dumps Lana, has to be Lana Lang. He says, you know, don't worry, I'm going to go take care of this. I'll see you later, Lana. But as he's flying off, he's thinking to himself that he's a little bit concerned about Metella being kryptonite powered.
Yeah.
Valid concern. Yeah. Well, So Superman flies off. He gets towards the Doom Patrol headquarters. As he lands, he sees that the scene is deserted. All the picketers have run off. And it looks like the Doom Patrol have all been killed or knocked out. But they're basically lying there prone on the ground.
Yeah, like a cover from a comic.
Yes. And Soup's words are, the Doom Patrol, they're not moving. And where's Metello? And where's Cliff Steele? What's happened? Mm-hmm. And that's where the issue ends.
And it's an interesting little note at the end on the last page. It said, thanks to Monica Livingston for background inks. Interesting.
They must have remembered her at the last possible minute.
Yeah.
So it's an odd, which would explain why she's not listed in the front page credits. Anyway, I really enjoyed this issue because it had action, it was exciting, and it actually had them interacting more with the DCU.
Yeah.
It was a lot of fun. What did you think of it, Paul?
Yeah, no, there's some fun Eric Larson art. There's lots of stuff getting trashed and fighting, and it's all very dynamic and exciting. Mm. And, yeah, I kind of – the bit where Cliff starts beating on the young members of the team.
at first it's like – he's like, yeah, you know, we'll let's tussle, kids. You know, it's just a training fight. And then he's like, uh-oh, hang on a minute. That's when it all goes downhill very quickly.
Yeah. So, yeah, good stuff. Mm. And the cover has Superman swooping over the... It's really the last page with Superman swooping in, except he looked like he's constipated.
Hey, super constipated. And the fact that Cliff's on the cover as well, but, you know, that's beside the point. So. But, yeah, it was a really good, fun issue, this. And, yeah, nice to see. I just really enjoyed a well-known villain from outside the Doom Patrol's usual rogues gallery interacting with them. I really enjoyed that. Yeah.
Yeah, it's cool stuff.
Mm. So, Paul, tell us about Superman number 20.
All right, Superman number 20. This is Superman Volume 2, the John Byrne run. It's cover dated August 1988, and it came out April 19th, 1988. And it was 75 cents. The editor was Mike Carlin. This is all information from Mike's Amazing World of Comics, which you should all check out if you want to know anything about a comic, basically. Yeah. And it was written by John Byrne. Inker was Carl Kiesel. Letterer was John Costanza. The colorist was Petrus Gutis, or Goldberg in brackets, so maybe she got married, I don't know. And the cover is by John Byrne, and it has a great image. It's sort of, you know, sometimes you get a shot from the comic. This is more of an impression. It's got the picture split in the threes, and on one side you've got a bit of Cliff Steele, in the middle you've got Superman, and on the other side you've got Metallo. Mm. So it says, Man of Steel, starring Doom Patrol. No, Men of Steel. That makes more sense.
Ah.
Yeah. Superman's the Man of Steel, and he's literally dealing with two Men of Steel.
Right. Got it.
Yeah. Gotcha.
Cool.
Yes. And, yeah, this is all beautifully done by John Byrne and Carl Kiesel. So inside we see we're in Kansas, and we see that Lana Lang is visiting Clark Kent's parents, Martha and Jonathan, and at their farm. And she takes them around the back, and Lana is introduced to Supergirl holding up a car. Huh. We're doing Supergirl again, Mike.
Oh, cool.
Yeah, and the Kents are very shocked to meet her, and she knows a little bit about them, which is freaky because they've never met her before. Mm. And she says, I don't understand. She said, Lex didn't say anything about this. I don't understand, but I'm going to find out. Then we get a little bit of Superman. The Superman books at this stage, I should explain, they were intertwined. So there were three Superman books when John Byrne launched Superman. Mm-hmm. So there was Superman, Adventures of Superman, and Action Comics. And at this point, Action Comics had suddenly split off and turned into Action Comics Weekly, which ran for about 43 weeks or something.
Okay.
Yeah. So it was just down to Adventures of Superman and Superman at this point. But they really were, you know, very heavily intertwined. So you'd constantly get plot points from other stories coming in and things right. getting built in the background. So at this point, we see there's been a murder and the police lady, Maggie Sawyer, is there to investigate. And they can't understand why this man dropped dead. And we see that on top of a bookshelf above them is a voodoo fetish with a spike shoved right in the middle.
Wow.
So good to see Maggie Sawyer. If you know your DC, you know she goes through lots of books and has quite an important hit role in titles right through to the 2000s.
I'm clutching at a possible straw here, but was she in Gotham Central?
She was in Gotham Central.
Go Mike!
And she was in Batwoman, so...
Right, yes, okay.
Yeah. Yes.
I thought the name was familiar. Hmm.
Yeah, and she's a lesbian, so it's very progressive of the Superman books back in the 80s. So, yeah. Then we see a bit of Daily Planet stuff with Cat Grant, who's a bit of a slut.
wow. Sort of
arriving at the offices, and she's flirting with Jimmy. Yeah, and wondering where Mr. Kent is, and she's, oh, and Jimmy says, Mr. Kent took the day off. And we see that Kent is flying out to Smallville, and he arrives at Lana's place. Then we get basically a jagged cut right in the middle of this page. Mm-hmm. So it's a real shock. So 1 minute he's talking to Lana, the next minute he is crouched over Celsius in the rubble.
Right.
And said, want to know what happened between these two panels, reader? Better pick up Doom Patrol 10 before you read any further. Which we did.
And God, they made a very smooth segue in that issue.
So in comic book fashion, the Doom Patrol are all lying in rubble trashed, but no one is seriously injured. And Superman wakes up Arani and said, what happened? And the rest of the team come to, and they explain to Superman that Roboman has gone nuts and turned against the Doom Patrol, and Metallo arrived as well. And Superman is going, yeah, well, that makes sense. They're similar beings. They're both human brains inside robot bodies. But the Doom Patrol are like, well, we've got to rescue our friend. We have to be there for Cliff. Yeah, but Joshua's told that he can't go with them by Arani, which is so Arani, isn't it?
Why would she do that?
That's what Joshua wonders. He gets very agitated and angry with her, and she said, no, you've got to help the team members who are hurt because you're the team medic. You can't argue with that.
Okay, so which team members are left behind then?
Have a guess. Who always gets left behind?
Hot Hands.
Hot Hands.
Okay, anyone else or just Hot Hands?
No, Rhea Lodestone gets left behind.
Oh, jeez.
Yeah.
Okay.
And Wayne's buggered off anyway, so
yeah,
Wayne's nowhere to be seen at this point. So, yes, Negative Woman and Arani are going off with Superman.
Wow.
Then we get a cutscene which deals with a bit of Superman business, which is about a guy called Milton Fine who's unstable in a hospital, and I think it's his friend or sister or someone is there, and she's complaining that he's not really normal, and she walks off and gets hit by a car.
Wow, okay.
Yeah.
Why is the name Milton Fine familiar to me?
That's a Brainiac plot.
Right, okay.
Yeah, basically there's this mentalist, a charlatan bloke who gets possessed by an alien intelligence called Brainiac. So yes. That's where that's coming from.
Right.
Yeah.
Cool.
Yeah.
Well, not cool about the woman getting hit, but, you know.
No. So that's progressing that plot, which will come into the Superman books in a few months after this. Superman is flying over Kansas City and very cleverly spots all the destruction. And he flies down and finds that Cliff Steele and Metallo are duking it out.
Excellent.
Yeah. And Metallo is urging Cliff to give it up. And they're, you know, and he said, don't call me Robot Man, and punches him. But then Metallo asserts control over Cliff's body again, and Cliff picks up a car and chucks it straight at a shop. And Superman intercepts it, which is unlike the Man of Steel movie.
Well, this was, 30-odd years before that? So.
Yeah. All right, then we see that the members of the Doom Patrol who were injured are all lying around in some sort of medic bay in the headquarters.
Mm.
Mm-hmm. And then Karma reappears, skulking in, you know. And then he said, "How was I to know that Metallo had a robot, had a human brain?" And Josh says, "You might have been able to immobilize him." And he said, "Yes, you need to know this stuff." So
he, like I said, he could have done something other than run away, but
yeah.
I shouldn't be surprised. Oh dear.
Yeah, but there's a great panel where Scott starts running out of the room. So even though he's injured, he's going. And Rhea goes, "Where are you going?" He said, "To help the others, to help Superman." It's got Superman's font in the word. And he looks totally stoked that Superman's on the scene and he wants to go hang with Superman.
Uh-huh.
Who wouldn't?
Well, yeah, but, you know, if you're injured after a big fight, you kind of... priorities. But Scott is Scott, you know. He's so super keen about everything. And we've seen in the past where being a superhero is everything to him. So I guess, you know, seeing Big Blue turn up and take care of things, of course that's going to inspire him to get up off, you know, a triage bed. Just, you know, "Oh, I'm bleeding everywhere with my hot hands, but, oh, let me help, Supes." Sorry, got carried away then.
Yeah. Then we get another scene in the country with Lana sitting inside a car listening to the radio description of the fight between Superman, Metallo and Robot Man. And she decides that she needs to help. And she says, "My mission will be forfeit if Superman dies now." So, what?
Huh?
Anyway, and she turns into Supergirl and flies off.
What?
Yeah, so there's two Lanas in this book if Supergirl keeps turning into Lana.
Because didn't Lana take the Kents and introduce them to Supergirl?
Yeah, yeah.
Okay.
It's weird.
I'm confused. Right.
No, I actually know what's happening. This Supergirl is actually a protoplasmic creation of Lex Luthor.
Ooh.
And he imprinted Lana Lang's brain on her.
Wow.
So that's why she knows the Kents and is confused by that. So she thinks she's Supergirl, but she's actually a sort of a... she can change shape and stuff. She just doesn't know it.
Huh.
So she thinks she's Supergirl. She thinks she's Lana Lang, but she really is just a tool of Lex Luthor, who's an evil bastard. And he wasn't above sleeping with his tool at some point.
Oh, no.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, wow.
He went there.
I was just about to say, hey, this is getting to the point where it's interesting enough that I might actually go and hunt it down. No, not now.
No, it's actually very good. The Superman books are very good at this point. Like, mm-hmm. the first, you know, 3 years probably of the Superman reboot is really good. In fact, you know, I'd say right up to when Dan Jurgens was all over the book and the death of Superman, it's very good. Okay. Sort of goes downhill after, you know, the reign of the Superman and everything comes back, and then they start, you know, they start doing more and more crazy ideas to generate sales. But right. At this point, the Superman books are solid. Like, okay. They're really well written. And, you know, fair to say this Superman book is actually written with more sophistication than probably the Doom Patrol issue is.
How dare you?
Yeah.
Why couldn't Byrne write them that sophisticated later on in his career then?
Oh, horses for courses, I don't know. Yeah. He was in a different place at that point, I think.
Right.
I think there was a bit more bitterness and... yeah. Anyway.
Anyway.
Let's not go there again. All right. So, Scott Fisher is arriving on the scene of the battle just in time to see... Negative Woman take a huge hit through Metallo and shred his middle, which is really cool. While Superman is struggling with Cliff. And then Superman does some thinking about, you know, internal monologuing about what happened with Metallo since he last saw him. And he, mm-hmm. you know, Metallo was kicking his butt. That was back in Superman number one. And just as he was about to finish him off, he got whisked away by something above, like a... looks almost like a UFO got him or something.
Ooh.
And then not long after that, Lex Luthor turned up with a kryptonite ring, which is very suspicious because Metallo had a kryptonite heart. And then he heard about someone raiding LexCorp properties around the world, and that was probably Metallo, given the flashback shows him.
Yes.
And that Cliff Steele was a client of LexCorp, getting robot body parts from LexCorp.
That's right.
Perhaps there's a connection that, you know, Metallo's been fiddling with them and now Robot Man is out of control.
Mm.
Yeah. So Cliff is punching Superman, and but he's, you know, he's quite in control of his voice, and he's saying, "You know what to do, Superman. We've got to stop him using me as a weapon. So take my head off." Which Superman rips his head off. Take a drink, everyone.
Wow, I was going to say it's been a dry episode so far.
And then Superman gets permission to trash his body now that the head's off. And Metallo realizes that he's lost control of Cliff at this point, so he sends in his robot droney things. And then he comes across a Negative Woman, Val's body, sitting there hunched up while her negative energy is flying around. And he says, oh, maybe I can kill her.
Uh-oh.
And just as he's about to kill her, someone saves her. Who is it?
I'm going to take a wild guess and say it's Protoplasm Lana Lang Supergirl.
No, it's someone with hot hands.
What?
Yeah. Scott saves Val.
Hang on, hot hand saves the day?
Yeah, he grabs Metallo's arm, and then Metallo starts grappling with him and starts pulling his arms behind him. So it's, you know, sort of wrestler move there.
Mm-hmm.
And Scott says he doesn't feel so good, and then he sort of bursts into flames, and Metallo goes red hot with the heat and starts screaming, "My brain, it's cooking my brain."
Wow.
Yeah. And Arani sees this and recognizes an opportunity and shoots ice at him. And what happens when something superheated gets covered in ice? It explodes.
Yeah. That's comic book science, all right.
Yeah, we get a great panel of Superman holding Robot Man's head, and Superman says, "Holy!" And Robot Man says, "Spit!"
Wow.
Yeah. So with Metallo out of the picture, the drones all collapse. The Doom Patrol with Superman are cleaning up, and they say they can't find Metallo's head. That's a bit suspicious.
Hmm.
And he's talking to Robot Man's head as he said this. Yeah. Yeah, so they're saying perhaps the head escaped. Anyway, they thank Superman. Superman flies off, and we see that as he flies off, Lana Lang is Supergirl. Actually, Supergirl, the Supergirl Lana Lang thing, is flying above him. And we get told that this will continue in Superman number 21.
Okay.
Which it does.
Oh, well, that's good. Continuity is important.
Yeah. So I totally rate this issue. It is part of another run, which I very much enjoy. So it's got that going for it. But for Doom Patrol action, it's very well drawn. You know, the whole team get a Guernsey, and Scott saves the day.
That's Scott doesn't do much, but when he does, that's obviously, yeah, I should explain to our listeners that I do not own this issue, and I have never read it yet. So it's one of the few things on my still yet to be bought for my Doom Patrol collection list. So the fact that Scott saves the day and saves Val and proves himself useful for a change, that's worth its weight in gold right there.
Yeah.
Wow.
You run out and get that, Mike.
I'm going to have to now.
Yeah, both these issues are on Comixology, I believe, if you are in the mood for digital comics, which I know you aren't, Mike, so it's okay.
Right.
You don't have to explain.
I'll consider it. I'm that pumped to read this issue that I might go and check it out digitally. Well, no promises.
That'll make it easier to post pictures of it, I'm sure.
Yeah. Okay, you got me there. But yeah, no, it sounds like a really cool issue. And yeah, I do love the cover of it as well, with Cliff and Clark and Metallo kind of all superimposed over each other. It looks really cool.
Yep. Cool. So that's it for Doomsplaining. That's a very good crossover, I reckon. So well done, all involved.
Yes.
Yeah, and I think Paul Kupperberg got a little bit of a credit in there as well for kibbutzing. So.
Right.
Which I presume is just helping with the plot.
Right. Okay.
So we're more than halfway through the Kupperberg run at this point.
Yeah.
Morrison's first issue is 19.
Yes. Yeah, so. Getting close, getting close.
Shall we go to the mailbag?
Let's do it.
Okay. This week on the Mailbag of Doom, we threw out the question, what is the best crossover in comics? And we got some answers, didn't we? We heard from Ange. Hi, Ange. Dr. Ange. Friend of the show, guest on the show recently.
He is still the man.
He is still the man. He said, best crossover as a question of the week. Mind-boggling. If company ride crossover, clearly Crisis on Infinite Earths. So, yeah, Supergirl fan has that to say. he said, if not an event, love the old JLA-JSO crossovers, especially this one with the Legion. Fun stuff. And he showed us some old Justice League JSA crossovers. I've never read any of those.
No, nor have I.
Yeah. I think I should, but I haven't. Yeah, anyway.
Yeah. One day. One day. We also heard from Martin Gray, at Martin Gray, and he said...
We decided to read his answer this week.
Yeah. Hi, Martin. Love your work. Thanks for writing in. he said his answer was Invasion. It was ambitious. It had Australia, Scott Fisher. We're calling him Hot Hands now, Martin. And it gave us Legion 89 and Blasters. Epic enjoyment. Now, I'm not sure about the Blasters comment.
There was a one-shot called the Blasters Special that came out of Invasion. And, Snapper Carr, the Legion sidekick.
Oh, God.
Yeah, that was his spacefaring team. And it was done very tongue-in-cheek by Peter David. So.
Right. Okay.
But it's crap. But Legion 89 is a great series. A totally bitchin' series, that one.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, really good. Yeah.
So that one and not Blasters. Is what
not Blasters.
Right. Good to know.
But there were some very dodgy depictions of Australia and Invasion.
Yeah. there were.
There was the Invasion beachhead was in Melbourne, and it was clearly drawn by someone who had never been to Melbourne in their life.
Yeah. Americans.
We've got a new comment from Keith J. Baker, G. Baker. I don't think we've had Keith Baker comment on the show before.
He's a new listener. Hi, Keith.
Hi, Keith. He said, trick question, there are none.
Right.
It's a bit absolute.
Very, very black and white. Yes. Okay. Fair enough. We heard from Waffle Danvers again, at Waffle Danvers. And Waffle said, would when Batman and Superman met for the first time on a cruise ship count? Sure. I don't recall that story, but sure, why not?
I think it was the historic first meeting of the two, if I remember correctly.
Yeah, it could be. You were around then.
Yeah. Mike. Okay, we heard from Greg Arujo, who's at G Arujo 1. He said, I'm a sucker for DC Marvel crossovers like JLA Avengers and Superman Spider-Man. Oh. Yeah, they're rare now, aren't they?
Oh, very much so. Yeah. Yeah. We did have a few good ones way back in the 80s. But I can't recall the last time, other than the Amalgam stuff, which isn't quite the same. But yeah, I think Marvel and DC have kind of kept well away from each other since those times.
Yeah, they don't play nice anymore.
No. Funny that. We heard from Ostrakos One, who this week is going by the Twitter handle of Trickle the Vein More. His answer was X-Men/New Teen Titans, top tier characters and creators, one of my favorite comics of all time.
Wow, never read it.
No, I can't say that I have either, but hey, if Kevin loves it, that's awesome.
Yeah. We have from Moby One, who's at Shmoby One, and he said best crossover. He did some stipulations here, so categories. So he said, event, Crisis on Infinite Earths. So him and Ange are of one mind on that. Surprise, he said, Elric in Conan. That is surprising. I've never knew that happened. And he said, page, Alan Moore, Swampy 24. And he posted a page which had a beautiful description of the JLA. Listen to this, he said. There is a house above the world where the overpeople gather. There is a man with wings like a bird. There is a man who can see across the planet and wring diamonds from its anthracite. There is a man who moves so fast that his life is an endless gallery of statues. In the house above the world, the overpeople gather and sit and listen to a dry, mad voice that whispers of Earth death. And it's got shots of the JLA satellite. So.
Very poetic stuff.
Yeah.
Wow.
Maybe one adds, the sheer poetry of that swampy page is swoon-worthy and never to be forgotten. Some of my favourite comic writing ever. Yeah, well put.
We also heard from Susan Cotton at Josie_mummy, and she said, I like them bigger than a panel, but smaller than a miniseries, and substantive. Miss Marvel had two, Wolverine and Captain Marvel.
Ah.
So, cool. Yeah.
You read those?
I think I read the Miss Marvel and Captain Marvel one.
Right.
I probably have, if it's one of the more recent ones that I'm thinking of.
Yep.
I can't recall the last time I read anything with Wolverine in. Oh, hang on. Age of Ultron. Yeah, let's not go there. But no, I really like Susan's description there. Bigger than a panel, smaller than a miniseries. That's cool.
Yep. We heard from Karthik Karkarella, good friend of the show, and he said, I arbitrarily limited myself to cross-company stuff, so my answer is Dredd and Batman. Yeah, there were some great Judge Dredd Batman crossovers. Judgment and Gotham. Yeah.
Very cool characters to have crossover.
Two very determined characters.
A little bit angsty, yeah. We heard from Fractures, WTF Frac, and his answer was Final Crisis. Okay.
Yeah, I think he senses that's controversial because he has a space and then says, yep.
Yeah. Yeah. Oh, look, it wouldn't be Frac without an answer like that, would it?
I must reread Final Crisis. It's been quite a few years since I read it.
It's a little bit dark from what I recall, but yeah.
I think I would say it was ambitious.
Okay.
Yeah. But I definitely want to give it a revisit.
Sure.
We heard from Daniel Walden. He said X-Men Clandestine, which I've never read.
I have a funny feeling that's Alan Davis on the art for that.
Yeah, I think it's definitely Alan Davis.
Yeah.
You know, that's a part of the Marvel Universe I've never sampled. So.
Okay.
Good to hear it's good, though.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And we heard from Marcus at Registrargis, and he said Amalgam Comics, specifically Dark Claw. And that was cool.
They were fun, the Amalgam Comics, weren't they?
Yeah, Wolverine mashed up with Batman. That's pretty cool. That's pretty cool.
Yeah. And we got a comic on a comment, not a comic. That would be weird. We got a comment on
Someone's
Facebook
excited.
From Shag Matthews, the old Firestorm fan himself.
Oh, hi Shag.
Yeah, and he said, if we're just talking about the core title of a crossover, probably for me it was Legends. Yeah, Legends was a great miniseries. That was introduced to Suicide Squad and the JLI in one miniseries.
Wow.
Yeah. Yeah, anyway. And then he adds, if we're talking about titles crossing over, then I'd go with Daredevil 257 and Punisher 10. I don't know if I've read that.
I have not read those. So.
Yeah. Anyway. And then he adds, if we're talking about mega crossover storylines, I'd go with the epic Batman No Man's Land. Wow.
That's a good call.
Yeah, no, that's a big series, that one. All right, Mike, what about you? You got an answer?
It's probably a bit more recent in the scheme of things, but Blackest Night, purely because, you know, I love my Green Lantern stuff, and that was, like, huge, and you had the Black Lanterns attacking everyone everywhere, and you had dead superheroes coming back to fight their loved ones and stuff, and it was crazy, and I really enjoyed it. It was, I think, the first big crossover to happen sort of just as I got back into comics after a few years away from them. And yeah, it just sort of blew my mind and it was great fun. And of course the Doom Patrol, you know, had a really cool issue where their dead former teammates are coming back as well and fighting them. So that was cool too. Yeah.
Yeah, no, the Blackest Night is an epic one. Yeah.
How about you, Paul? What's your answer?
I think I'll just go with the Janus Directive, which was a Suicide Squad crossover.
Oh, yes. I think this was one of the earliest crossovers DC did.
Oh, no, probably not. But, you know, it's a really good one. It's basically all the secret teams of the DC Universe gets pitted against each other. So, you know, and by their secretive natures, they, you know, they're easily fooled into mistrust. So Checkmate end up fighting the Suicide Squad, and then you have the Captain Adams group involved, and you know, they even had Firestorm, who was sort of a blank slate at that point, getting tricked into being involved. So and they all end up fighting Cobra.
Ooh.
Ooh, and you know, it gets very James Bond with, you know, sort of bases hovering above the earth and, you know, things going kablooey. It's really cool.
Cool. Oh yeah, yeah. It was the one after Invasion. So yeah, 1989. So
yeah.
I guess from my point of view, from DC history, and that it's yeah, kind of early-ish, shall we say? Yeah.
Yeah, cool. So I think it was across 5 titles or so, which was pretty big at the time.
Yeah, I think that's correct, because I know I've got it on my wish list on a comics database to get all the parts of that, because I don't think DC have ever reprinted it.
No, they might get to it now that they've actively started reprinting Suicide Squad properly. So they're up to, there's 3 volumes solicited so far. Mm-hmm. And yeah, I think, so they'll probably get to it in 2016 if they keep on track.
Right.
So I hope they do.
That'd
it's
be cool.
One I enjoy rereading very often.
Yeah.
Right. Now, we got an email. Mike, do you want to take us through this email?
Do I get to read it? Sweet. Okay. Yes, this week we got an email from a longtime fan and friend of the show, Rift. It's Rift's first email. And Rift writes, "Well, hello, Waiting for Doom. Just a quick email since I can't deal with Twitter's stupid character limit. Contradiction? Maybe. So wow, episode 39. It has been a great run all the way through. Each and every one of the special guests has been amazing. So thank you, Mike and Paul, for taking the time to do the show. It truly is awesome and a great listen. Thank you, Rift. I really appreciate that." He didn't write that. I just said that. I would also like to take a moment and thank all the other listeners for their involvement and encouragement. I look forward to the Mailbag of Doom every week. As it was made glaringly obvious thanks to my question of the week response, yeah, thanks for that, guys, really had my back, not, my comic book exposure has been limited. It was mainly in the form of the various cartoons and movies that were available whilst growing up. I did try my hand at collecting a few titles a couple of years back and picking a few trades up. These were all Marvel titles, as they were the characters and teams I was most familiar with. Many times while listening to Waiting for Doom, I am introduced to characters I've never heard of before. The passion and enthusiasm you guys and your guests show during each podcast each week is truly compelling. Plus, all the other podcasts I've been introduced to, like Mike's other podcast, Funtime Comics, and Secret Origins, are all driving me to exploit Paul's extensive trade library to explore not only the Doom Patrol, but the entire DC Universe. That's very good of you, Paul. You're a good friend.
Yeah.
It's very good of you to share your books. Episode
Riff shares his house with me every week when I record, so because he has good internet and I don't.
It sounds like a fair and equitable deal for everyone. Rift continues. Episode 39 was a lot of fun. The amazing Dr. Ange guest starred and went from a disembodied Twitter account that seemed to fit an incredible amount of comics, Twitter comments, reviews, guest appearances, TMC parties, football, and pumpkins, all while being a full-time doctor and father, that he had me convinced he had access to some sort of time-traveling device. So from all of that to realizing he's an actual person. This was truly a giant special with so many great one-liners and concepts. I had to take notes while listening. Paul's Monty Python reference went totally unnoticed. It didn't. I did put up a link on Twitter for those that hadn't seen it before. It was only outmatched by the complete fail, followed by the best awkward silence moment of modern times after his calling it joke. Best comedy ever. And let's not forget his overreacting line. Classic dad joke gold.
I was on fire that, wasn't I?
Yeah, on fire. Whoa. I agree with Dr. Ange's observation that if the government did start tracking big monitor sales, it would have a heads up on an up-and-coming hero or supervillain. Now, if my question of the week answer for Doom Patrol wasn't eligible, then how can Mike say the Doom Patrol? Something to do with it being his show, I bet. Fascist. Joking. Thanks for the heads up on the Laughley's book as well, but I'm now intrigued to see how bad it is.
I can lend him the threshold trade, which is Laughley's backups.
Rifty signs off. Okay, guys, that's it for me for one email. Please keep up the great work and look forward to many more episodes. Cheers, Rift. Thank you very much, Rift. That's an awesome email, and I appreciate every word you said just then.
Yeah, he's a great friend of the show, and personally a great friend to me. He's, meeting Rift is one of the best things about moving out where I have moved.
Cool.
Yeah. And we also got another Facebook comment from a guy called Abel Padilla, and he said, "I was sent over by the Secret Origins podcast, and this was my first episode. I've made the commitment and added you to my podcast feed. Fun. Thank you for the delightful podcast." Thanks,
Abel.
Yeah.
So cool to get new listeners tuning in and hear us talk about, this wacky comic book team that we love so much. So, but seriously, guys, thank you for those that tune in each and every episode and you know, enjoy the show as much as you do. So,
absolutely.
Much appreciated.
Yeah. Well, I guess that's it for this episode. So if you want to get in touch with on Twitter, just contact Wilfred at WFDpod. As always, the email is waitingfordoom@gmail.com. We've got the Facebook page if you want to drop a comment there. And next week...
Oh, my God. Can I say it? Can I please? I've been waiting for this episode for so long. Oh, my God. Next week, episode 41. Guys, everyone is invited to the wedding of the year. The social event of the year. That's right. It's the wedding of Rita and Mento. Oh, my God. I don't even care that she marries Mento. It's like, oh, my God.
It's beautiful.
So, I'm a little bit excited. I'm just going to calm down now. But, yes, it's Elastigirl marrying Mento, and it's a huge affair. This is, in case you couldn't tell, this was one of my favorite stories from the original run. Even though it's basically a wedding issue, I love it so much. It's so cool.
Wow.
Cool. And then we get to see them on their honeymoon too. Oh my God. So, Paul, do we have a question of the week for next episode to go with that theme?
Well, you've got a week to calm down, but until then, the question of the week is, what's the best romance in comics? Which probably isn't Mento and Rita in reality, but it is.
Yeah, it kind of goes. I'll be surprised if anyone does say Rita and Mento, but, you know, each to their own. But no, I'm seriously really excited for the wedding. It's like the only wedding that they have in the entire run. It's so cool.
Oh, yeah, hiding it well.
Yeah, I'm a bit of a softie and I'm a bit excited. And let's sign off for now before I... Okay, that's it for this week, guys. Thank you so much for listening, and we will catch you again next time.
Bye, everyone.
Okay, I'll have to think of a witty intro. Nah, fuck it.
No, we don't need it.
Don't need it. Okay, ready?
Yeah.
Here we go. 3, 2, 1. Hello, and welcome to Waiting for Doom, the world's greatest and pretty much only blah, blah, blah. Wow.
So rusty.
There's a hidden track. Okay. Here we go.
Okay.
This time for real. Blah, blah, blah.